The title is different from the one in the conference schedule. We don't actually have a proof of stability results, but we have results that allow us to prove stability of our pin velocity. So let me begin by first introducing you to the problem of pinning. So when a superconductor is placed in an external magnetic field, the magnetic field penetrates the superconductor in long thin filaments or flux tubes of magnetic flux called magnetic vortices. These vortices were first conjectured to exist by Russian physicist Abry Kosov in 1957, and he conjectured that they were arranged in a periodic type lattice array. So the presence of vortices in a superconductor leads to dissipation of energy. This is because the vortices get dragged along by the superconducting current. So when the vortices move, then they generate an electric field parallel to the electric current. And in fact, it acts to resist current flow, and hence energy is dissipated. Physicists have observed that if impurities, defects, or inhomogeneities are present within a sample, then the vortices actually get immobilized or get pinned down to the sites of the inhomogeneities. So our goal in this paper is to use the Ginsburg-Landau theory of superconductivity to prove rigorously what the physicists have seen experimentally. Okay. So before I state the mathematical problem of pinning, I'm just going to go quickly over the Ginsburg-Landau equations. So macroscopically, states of a superconductor are described by pairs psi and a, where psi is a complex value function on the plane called order parameter, and A is a vector value function from the plane to itself called the vector potential. And this pair, psi and A, satisfy the Ginsburg-Landau equations of the following form: minus Laplacian A psi plus lambda of 2 psi squared minus 1 psi is equal to 0, and curl squared A plus the imaginary part of psi bar gradient A psi is equal to 0. Here, lambda greater than 0 is a material parameter, depending on the material. And, of course, gradient A is just the covariant gradient, and Laplacian A is just the covariant gradient A squared. Now, I note here that we only consider the Ginsburg-Landau equations in two dimensions. That is, we consider super-thin film superconductors, or superconductors which are spatially homogeneous in a z-direction, or where we can neglect the effects of the boundary. Therefore, for vector A, curl of A is just a scalar, partial 1A2 minus partial 2A1. And for a scalar C, the curl of C is just the vector with components minus partial 2C and partial 1C. Actually, no, we don't need to assume they're divergence free. Okay. So the Ginsburg-Landau equations are macroscopic equations for equilibrium states of a superconductor. For example, the norm of psi squared represents locally the density of superconducting electron pairs, or Cooper pairs. That is, if the norm of psi is equal to 1, then locally it is in a superconducting state, and if the norm of psi is equal to 0, then locally it is in a normal state. Note here that the second equation here in the Ginsburg-Landau equations is just the Maxwell equation for magnetic field B and supercurrent, imaginary part of psi bar, gradient A psi. Now, the Ginsburg-Landau equations have the following symmetries. They have translational symmetry, which means if psi and A is a solution, then psi and A translated by Z for any Z in R2 is also a solution. They also have gauge symmetry, which means if psi and A is a solution, then e to the I gamma psi and A plus gradient gamma is also a solution. For completeness, I'll just add rotational symmetry, which means if psi and A is a solution, then psi at G inverse X and A and G, A at G inverse X is also a solution for any G in SO2. Another feature of the Ginsburg-Landau equations is flux quantization. Defined for large enough R, the degree of psi as the degree of the unit vector field, psi over the norm of psi, restricted to this circle. This is an element of the integers. Now, assuming we have a finite energy solution to the Ginsburg-Landau equations, finite energy I'll explain later, then we can show that the total magnetic flux through the whole plane is an integer multiple of 2 pi. Now we come to the main objects of a lot of these talks, which are vortices. The only known solutions to the Ginsburg-Landau equations are the so-called equivariant or radiosymmetric solutions of the following form. Sine of x is equal to fn of r e to the in theta, and an of x is equal to small an of r gradient of n theta. And the pair psi n, an are called n vortices or magnetic vortices. Now here, n is an integer and r theta are polar coordinates of vector x in R2. Existence was first proven by Plohr in his Princeton PhD thesis in 1978, and again by Berger and Chen in 1989 using methods of calculus of variations. And stability of these n vortices was proven by Gustafson and Siegel in 2000. Now I'm just going to flash this picture of some plus and minus 1 vortices. And here is the asymptotic behavior of Fn as approaches infinity. Fn approaches 1 as exponentially as e to the minus minimum of square root of lambda n2 times r, and an approaches 1 as exponentially as e to the minus r. Yeah. Now I define our manifold of vortex solutions. Denote for convenience psi naught a naught for as the one vortex solution to the Ginzburg lambda equations. Then the symmetries imply that psi z gamma, az gamma, defined as the composition of translational and gauge symmetries, is also a solution to the Ginzburg lambda equation for any z in R2 and gamma in solo space of order 1. Now these solutions, the pair psi z gamma, az gamma, they form an infinite dimensional manifold of vortex solutions parameterized by z in R2 and gamma in solo space of order 1. So here's the promised Ginzburg lambda energy function. Now I'm ready to state the main problem of pinning. So now we consider the Ginzburg lambda equations with external potential W sub epsilon depending on a small parameter epsilon. Now this external potential represents impurities or defects or inhomogeneities in our sample. So now the question is, what happens to these vortices? Okay. So now let me state our main results, but before that, let me state our assumptions on the potential. Suppose our potential is of order epsilon in L2, which I label as condition A, and it's m times differentiable with derivatives bounded by epsilon times delta to the power of alpha, which I label as condition B. Now, define the effective potential felt by the one vortex as the convolution of our potential with the function psi naught squared minus 1. Now, we only consider the domain omega epsilon delta as a set of all points in R2, where if the norm of our gradient of our potential is much less than epsilon times delta, then the Hessian there is invertible with inverse bounded by epsilon delta squared to the power of minus 1. Now, here is our existence result. So, suppose our potential satisfies conditions A and B, where m is equal to 3. And in addition, suppose delta is much less than 1, and epsilon is much less than delta times the minimum of 1, delta and delta squared. And suppose our potential has a critical point at z naught in our domain of consideration. Then we could show that for epsilon sufficiently small, there exists a solution to the Ginzburg lambda equations with potential of the following form. Psi sub epsilon, a sub epsilon, is a translation by z epsilon of the one vortex, plus a small correction, c sub epsilon, beta sub epsilon, where z sub epsilon is of order epsilon away from z naught, and c sub epsilon, beta sub epsilon, is of order epsilon in the respective solar spaces in of order 2. And here, gamma is just an arbitrary gauge. Okay. So therefore, when you turn on the potential, vortex solutions still survive and get pinned down close to the critical points of our external potential. Okay. Now, in fact, in a proposition I'll state later on, there is a one-to-one correspondence between critical points of our potential and our effective potential. And hence, if our potential has a critical point at z-naught, then there exists a vortex solution centered at z epsilon, which is of order epsilon plus order delta away from z naught. Okay. Now, just some remarks on our existence results. So this result confirms the pinning phenomena observed by physicists. And similar, Italian Sandir and Safadi has done has proven the same result, but for the lambda approaching infinity regime and for applied external magnetic fields, bounded domains, and for maximums and minimums. Okay. So here they consider the energy functional, where they replace one by a potential A sub epsilon, which is bounded between a positive constant and one. And in fact, Andre Baumann and Phillips in 2003 has proved a stronger pinning result than the above for sufficiently large applied magnetic fields and for zeros of a non-negative potential A sub epsilon. They showed that for any disk of radius r around a zero to potential, there exists a vortex solution for epsilon sufficiently small within that disk. Okay. And Chapman, Du, and Günzberger has done numerical simulations of pinning. So now I'll state our uniqueness results. So define V as the vector psi A and V zeta gamma as psi zeta gamma A zeta gamma on our manifold of vortex solutions. Then assuming again our potential satisfies all the conditions of theorem 1 again. And assume only for simplicity that our potential is of the form epsilon times W. Then we have the following uniqueness result. So suppose our Z0 is in our domain of consideration is a bifurcation point. That is, there exists solutions V sub a family of solutions V sub epsilon of Ginsburg lambda equation with potential, which converge to a point on our manifold of vortex solutions for some arbitrary gauge gamma. Then, in fact, we can show that Z0 is a critical point of our effective potential for epsilon sufficiently small. In addition, suppose we have two families of solutions converging to the same point, VZ0 gamma, for some Z0 in our domain of consideration. Then we can show that V epsilon is, in fact, equal to V epsilon prime for epsilon sufficiently small. Okay. Now, let me state our existence of a reduced energy functional. So we work in a space, of course, everyone, Bopace H2 as the direct sum of the solar spaces of order 2, and similarly, define L2 similarly with this following inner product. And define V0 as the point on a manifold of vortex solutions at Z equal to 0 and gamma equal to 0. And define our affine space, Bopace H sub naught squared, as the sum of V sub naught plus vectors in H2. Then, under the conditions of theorem 1 again, and for epsilon sufficiently small, we can show that there exists a constant, delta naught greater than 0, and a 3 times differentiable function, phi sub epsilon, on the plane, such that there's a 1-to-1 correspondence between the full critical points of the full energy functional in a tube of radius delta naught around our manifold of vortex solutions, and the critical points of our reduced energy functional, phi sub epsilon on the plane. Okay. So now, as promised, here is the proposition relating our potential with the effective potential. So suppose our, again, all the conditions of theorem 1 are satisfied, then if our potential has a critical point at Z prime in our domain of consideration, if and only if our effective potential has also a critical point at Z0 in our domain of consideration, with the critical point separated by a distance of order delta. And in fact, the relation between the critical points is flipped. That is, if our potential has a maximum, then our effective potential has a minimum, and vice versa. And now I will state now our theorem on that will allow us to prove stability of these pin vortices. So assume the conditions of theorem 1 are satisfied again. And if our potential has, say, let's start off with a minimum first at some Z prime in our domain of consideration, then the corresponding solution, as guaranteed by theorem 1 and proposition 1 here above, is a strict local modulo gauge symmetry maximizer of the full energy function. Okay, so once again, if our potential has a minimum, then our full energy functional has a maximum, okay, and vice versa. And if our potential has a maximum, then okay. So again, theorem 4 allows us to show that if the if our potential has a maximum, then the corresponding solution is orbitally stable. Otherwise, it's orbitally unstable. So some remarks on the results above. So in fact, all our conditions on the parameters in the statements above are in fact not uniform in lambda. The restrictions imposed, like they weaken as lambda approaches infinity. We need actually a lower bound on the integral of 1 minus fn squared to have stronger results. So that's kind of hard, so we haven't done that yet. So theorem 1, 2, and 4 give mathematical content to the physical picture of pinning. So out of a continuum of vortex solutions to the Ginzburg-Landau equations, only a few vortex solutions survive once the potential is turned on. And these solutions are localized near critical points of the potential. And only those which are localized near maximum are stable. And theorem 3 introduces a reduced energy functional, which gives a complete description of the vortex vortex center and its stability. Okay, so in the last remaining, say, I'll just give a quick outline of the proof. So define our full energy functional. E sub epsilon is just the Ginzburg-Landau equation, energy functional, plus the contribution from the potential. And define the mapping from our affine space to L2 as the right-hand side. F sub epsilon is the right-hand side of the Ginzburg-Landau equation, so potential. And pi sub gamma as the orthogonal projection onto the kernel of the linearized operator at V z gamma. And pi sub gamma as the orthogonal complement. Then, existence of these pin vortices relies on two steps. The first one is we break the problem up. We use Lyapunov-Schmidt reduction to break the problem up into its orthogonal and tangential directions. More precisely, we show that for every we break it up respect to the manifold of vortex solutions. Okay. So, more precisely, we show that for every z in R2 and gamma in Sobolev space of order 1, and for epsilon sufficiently small, there exists a unique vector, vz gamma epsilon, in the orthogonal complement to the tangent space to our manifold of vortex solutions at vz gamma, such that the equation in the orthogonal direction has a solution. Okay. Now, the key fact we use here is that the unperturbed linearized operator at vz gamma restricted to the orthogonal complement to the tangent space to our manifold of vortex solutions at vz gamma is invertible. So this was proven by Gustafsson and Siegel in 2000 in their stability paper. And then we just used implicit function theorem to show that there exists a solution in orthogonal direction. And finally, once we solve the problem in the orthogonal direction, then we solve the corresponding reduced problem in the tangential direction. More precisely, we solve the following equation for z epsilon on the plane. To do this, we substitute the orthogonal solution found above into the full energy functional to define the reduced energy functional, phi sub epsilon, which is just a function on the plane. Then we show that phi epsilon has a critical point at z epsilon, if and only if this equation in the tangential direction has a solution at z epsilon. And then finally, we show that if our effective potential has a critical point at z naught in our domain of consideration, then phi sub epsilon has a critical point at z epsilon, which is of order epsilon away from z naught. And that's the end of my talk.